Hi, I'm Annabelle.
And I'm Wilder.
And we're the hosts of Things Every 13-Year-Old Should Know, a podcast about, well, everything.
And anything, specifically things that we want to know about and understand.
Things like...
Like how do you become a pro surfer?
Or become the first woman on the Supreme Court.
Or write a screenplay.
Or learn how to play guitar.
Or learn to drive.
Or learn how to skateboard.
Or keep your head together during a global pandemic.
Or learn how to start a podcast. So, what do you want to know about? Us too.
So check us out every week
as we explore the world of being 13.
Anybody's welcome.
But mostly 13-year-olds.
Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to Things Every 13-Year-Old Should Know. I'm Annabelle, here with my co-host Wilder. Welcome to our very first episode. Wilder, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I'm feeling really excited to be recording our first episode. I hope it goes well. What have you been up to lately?
I've been up to a lot of skateboarding, hanging out with friends, going back to school in person in the hybrid model. With that being postponed, school's been a little laid back, so I've been able to go outside a lot more, which is nice because the weather's honestly like been really, really like reasonable. But what have you been up to?
I've been hanging out with friends as well, and I've been playing a lot of basketball with friends who I haven't seen in a while. So that's really fun. It's always great to see friends you haven't seen through quarantine. But even though we're like getting some stuff back, like being able to be with friends outside, there's still so much stuff we can't do.
You know what I mean? I know. And it sucks because like if COVID wasn't a thing, like we'd be able to do so much more, like, you know, go back to seeing movies or like taking the subway or going to theater and going to watch things on Broadway. Our guest today was actually on Broadway several times, including for the tour of Frozen, and has been in a lot of stuff, actor, model. Please welcome Colin Baja.
Yay. Hello. Thank you for having me, guys.
Thank you for being here. Thank you so much.
Of course.
You want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, gladly. My name is Colin Baja. I am not 13. I am 35. and I am a performer. I've been a professional dancer and actor and singer in concert dance around the world with different companies, and for the past decade, mainly Broadway shows. And when the pandemic struck, I was in my third month of what was going to be at minimum a year of playing Sven in the first national tour of Frozen.
Yeah.
Disney's Broadway show Frozen.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about your bio and I watched a video. It looks really hard to be Sven. Like,
yeah, to say the least. So because this is a podcast, I'll try and paint you a picture. But Sven is the comedic reindeer best friend of Kristoff, right? But in order to bring that character to life in live theater, they were going back and forth of how to do it. Does it need to be a circus performer? Does it need to be a dancer, an actor? How? And Michael Curry, this prolific puppeteer and creator who did all the Lion King animals and Katy Perry's giant lion that she came out in at Super Bowl halftime show, things like that. He created a way to have a dancer who has acting history bring Sven to life. And so it's me in a plank position for about 2.5 hours on 4 stilts where I can only see from the other actors' knees down because I have a huge body harness that then controls the puppet head of Sven. And in my left stilt, with one flick of a finger on this little wire, I'm controlling the blinking. And on my right one, I'm controlling the ear movement. And then the actual fabric and how they've made the other parts of the body that go on top of me, not only is it heavy, but it's kind of a free animation look. So it really does do that Disney magic or the theatrical magic, because nobody understands if there's 2 people inside of that, 1 person, 3 small children, who knows?
That sounds really cool, but not something I would do. That sounds super hard.
Hey, skateboarding sounds hard to me, but you do that all the time.
You had to be in a plank position for, you said, 2.5 hours, and you had to control all that stuff. Like, when you were to, like, when I looked at the picture of, like, Sven on the article, it seems so simple. And then when you explained it, I'm thinking, like, how could someone on this earth possibly do that?
That's exactly what I'm thinking as well.
Like, my jaw dropped. I'm like, how is that? Like, how did you even train for that?
You know, honestly, in the audition, they just put us in a lightweight version of the costume, like the head, and put us on stilts and basically just said, try and do this. And later they said that within the first 2 minutes, they were able to see the potential in someone's body and control. Because you can't really train for something like that, no matter what you've done in your life. It's so specific. So in those 2 minutes, they kind of were able to assess who had the potential to then, when they got hired, we started a week or a week and a half earlier than every other actor. And we kind of got put through a boot camp. We had to learn how to hold ourselves, how to walk, how to run, how to gallop, how to act inside of this puppet. Because even though I'm not singing and acting, it is a physically acting and very important role. And so by the time the other actors came in, you have to be able to be a real scene partner. But if you're a reindeer, you have to first be able to be a reindeer.
So. Sounds harder than probably a lot of the other roles in that musical. I don't think I would have gotten that part or any part. Broadway is crazy. And speaking of Broadway, in your bio, it said you also appeared in the musical Hello, Dolly.
I did, yeah.
How was that?
That was one of the most magical times of my life, only because I was not original cast. I came in 6 months after it opened. So coming in, and that was my first time replacing someone. And so, but it was really magical because it's already a hit show. You're coming into an already established group. But I was very fortunate because I had just the greatest colleagues, other performers, and group of men with me. And it's such an ensemble show, even though obviously led by the dynamic powerhouse of Bette Midler and Bernadette Peters, the ensemble has so much to do. And so it's not only an athletic show, a comedic show, a fun show. We all got to sing. It's the most singing I've gotten to do in a Broadway show. I had the time of my life because of the people that I and the little families I made. Because that's what happens with Broadway shows. You end up making these little families, some of whom you know are going to be lifelong and some you know are just going to be for the time you're in the show together. But I have a group of friends that I made that are lifelong from Hello, Dolly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you went to Juilliard, which is like, I actually don't know like a lot of people that went there. Aren't they like specialized for doing like acting, theater, like music? Because I know like a lot of people typically go to Juilliard for like music if they want to be in like orchestra or something like that.
So Juilliard, yeah, to answer your question, Juilliard is music, dance, and theater.
Yeah.
So it is a conservatory that is specialized in those performing arts.
What, like around what age did you know that you wanted to like be on Broadway one day or per se like act or like dance or model?
Good question. To tell you the truth, I was one of those kids that like I was born just kind of performing, putting on shows in the living room, trying to mimic and memorize all the Janet Jackson and Michael Jackson choreography. Please tell me you know who those two people are.
Yeah. Yes.
I was that kid, but I got teased all the time for it. You know, being a male who's into dance, who's into singing, who's into movies and putting on shows, the teasing and the bullying became so much that I kind of chose to ignore my passion for it. And then it was probably around. And actually, I'm not just saying this because of the podcast. It was probably around 12 or 13 that I switched my mentality around it and said, no, I love this too much. So I got back into full-time dance classes. I actually asked if I could, you know, audition for the choir. I tried to take whatever I could that was around me. And then that new confidence and that willingness to kind of just embrace it made it even stronger inside of me that like I have to do it. I have to be on stage, I have to perform.
That's a really cool story. I mean, going from like performing shows in the living room to Broadway, that's a really big leap. What steps did you take like between that?
But I mean, I would argue that that's almost the standard route, right? Everybody who likes to perform ends up starting it in their living room or in the park or, you know, You're going to become a professional skateboarder. You probably started on the streets with your friends in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
So you start somewhere small, and then you just kind of develop a passion.
Yeah.
But the steps along the way are specific to each individual. Mine, you know, it depends on life circumstance, where you end up, this and that. For me, I was pretty lucky because, like I said, once I made that choice that I wanted to actually pursue it, I auditioned for anything around me that I could. I got into a local dance like studio. And then started just saying yes to whatever opportunity came with that, whether it be performing at the local fairs or little parades or being asked to be part of a new choreography, like a piece of choreography or something. And then even though it still wasn't cool, when I got into high school, I went out and auditioned for the choir. I auditioned for the musicals. Any acting opportunity I could, just because I wanted to learn, I wanted to get better. And then through all of that, I got pretty lucky because I was living a half hour away from a performing arts boarding high school. And they saw me performing a role at the local high school musical. I was playing in Music Man. And they asked me to come audition for the dance division at Interlochen was the name of it, Interlochen Arts Academy. And I did, and I was, of course, you know, what was I was 14, and I was defiant, and I didn't want to leave my friends, and no way would I go to this place. And but my parents were very gentle and reminded me that this is my passion, and so I did. I switched high schools and went to a performing arts boarding high school where I would do academics from 8 a.m. to noon. And then I would dance every day from 12 noon until about 6:30 p.m.
Whoa.
Go have dinner and then do some academic studies and study groups and then go back and dance from about 7 to 10.
Oh, wow.
That is a lot. Jeez, I could not do that. That's crazy.
Heather, you say that a lot in responses to things. I couldn't do that. I couldn't book.
I know, but that's because I'm so impressed with all the stuff you're doing. It's like crazy.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. But I bet you could do it if it was your passion. The same way that, like, I can't skateboard, nor do I want to, but it's one of your passions and you're a killer surfer. But I got thrown into, by choice, but also thrown into almost a college-like experience of really dedicated, intense training. Because by the time I was 13, 14, 15, I knew that I wanted to be a performer. And so Interlochen was such a gift because it was an open, eclectic, brilliant, awesome college kind of lifestyle for high school, but also gave me really detailed training.
And I know you tapped on to this a bit earlier when you were mentioning how it was kind of like rough like in theater when you were around our age back then. But like overall, like what was it like growing up when you were 13? Because it's obviously like, even though it's not that long, it's very different from what it is like today, obviously.
I was not a cool kid. And also I was, for context, I grew up in Northern Michigan. So, I mean, you guys are just innately cooler because you're like on the streets of Brooklyn, you know what I mean? I was stuck in Northern Michigan as a closeted young performing male who was not cool. I had one best buddy, who is still my best buddy of 23 years. His name's Eli, who I somewhat became a bit more, not popular by any means, but I was accepted because I was best friends with him. But 13 was a tough year for me because I was struggling to embrace an honest, like my honest self. And I don't just mean being gay. At 13, I was, like I said, I came to the aha moment of like my intuition, my desires, my interests matter more than what any other bully or friend or whomever thinks, right? Because I was trying to fit in. I was trying to be something I wasn't. And the minute I switched and just said, no, fuck it. Like I am a performer. I am outgoing. I am all these kind of things. That completely switched my whole world and trajectory. That's why at 14, I was able to go audition for Interlock. And that's why I was able to find a community inside of choir and musical theater. 13 was an interesting year because I was defiant to my parents. I thought I knew everything, even though I knew nothing. But at one thing I did know was the one thing I was trying to hide from, which is that I was meant to be a performer and I wanted to pursue that. So as soon as I embraced it, it kind of flourished all from there. But also, I didn't have a cell phone. There was no social media. This is old school bullying. This wasn't like social media meanness. Like,
no, it's so weird because, like, in this pandemic, as weird as it was and as sudden as it was, and I've noticed this throughout a lot of people, especially kids my age, like everyone seemed to like start to like really find themselves. And I don't know if it was because not necessarily like lack of school, but like not being in such like an orderly like structure every day that people like finally found time to like then find themselves pursue something that they love. Because we like in the beginning of quarantine, like there was no plan. Like we had so much free time on our hands and we all thought it was just going to be vacation when in fact it wasn't. We had to like then occupy ourselves with like stuff to like keep us going, which like then turned into like things that like we found a passion for. Like, for example, like skateboarding. Like I started that like middle of quarantine May, and now like I do it every day, and now I have a bunch of friends who skate with me. So yeah,
I love that. Also, I think you just tapped into such an enormous point about the pandemic in general for everyone, no matter what age.
Yeah.
Everyone was forced into this like isolation, into a new abrupt shift where so many of the things that we identified ourselves with, going to school, going to work, having this structure, having this outlet, having the gym, having whatever, was stripped away. So it forced everyone to start being more in tune with what they actually are interested in,
yeah,
what actually matters to them, how they want to actually authentically spend their time and energy. And that has led to a lot of new creative endeavors, new passions, new realizations, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. It was almost like a self-reflection on like, it was, I don't know. It felt like as harsh as it is and as bad as it is, it was very valuable. Like the year 2020 to me, like as horrible and as much as I hated it, it was probably one of the most valuable years I think I might ever go through.
Yeah. Definitely. I feel like everyone is kind of experiencing similar things, like Colin was saying, no matter what age. It's like it really gave everyone time to like find, like everyone did a ton of random stuff, and that led like a ton of people to what they really love to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really kind of a forceful, abrupt shift for all of us, but it has led to some silver linings as well.
Yeah,
definitely. What is something you want every 13-year-old to know out there? Like a piece of advice you would give to 13-year-olds out there today?
Girl, I got a laundry list. How many you want?
Or like what you wish that you knew when you were 13. Like if you could go back and tell yourself.
All right, these may be boring answers, but honestly, I hope every one of you 13-year-olds listens and takes this to heart. Start understanding money now in the sense of how to save it, how to balance a checkbook, what taxes are. You don't have to master any of that, but those are the life lessons that are not taught to you anywhere in the real world, and then you're thrown into it and you're just scrambling. Start to understand money in a way that just like how your passions can make you money, how you can actually save money in a smart way for whatever it is you want, some cool travel or something in the future. But just start to actually have an awareness around the complete crap of money and how it should not dictate your choices, but also how you do need to be smart with it, even at a young age. Number two, follow your own intuition. Don't try and be anything other than yourself, because especially at 13, as you're coming into your own self and developing your own sense of values, there are going to be so many bullies and punks and other people and trying crowds you're going to try and fit into and this and that. Who gives? Who cares? Follow your own intuition. Be you. Be you as 110% possible.
That, yeah, that's great. I'm going to try and do that more because I kind of suck with money overall.
Yeah.
Same.
Fair enough.
Do you have any advice you'd want to give to a 13-year-old or younger about like passion and career wise?
You know, no, because honestly at 13 or at any age, like I feel really lucky that I knew what I wanted to do by 13. I will be honest though, that's not the norm. That's not normal. You are at an age where, at 13 especially, I think soak in any experience that interests you. If surfing interests you, go surf more. If singing interests you, go take a lesson. Ask your parents how you can incorporate new things that are interests, because you don't have to have your passion at 13. If you do, great. Then absolutely, you know how to break it down and work towards something. But you don't have to. You don't need to. And there's no reason to at 13. So whatever you are interested in, just start soaking it up. Start seeking it out. Start surrounding yourself with the people who are like-minded, who have similar interests, so that you can bounce those ideas off each other, so you can make something of it. Like you guys did with this podcast. Two like-minded, cool people who wanted to make something and created something. Whether this becomes your passion, who knows? But it's this kind of stuff, creating and being around the people that have similar interests.
So we were also reading your bio, and it says that you were in Spider-Man the Musical. Was that anything like being Sven, or was it very different?
Oh, no, entirely different. Every Broadway show is entirely different, but also Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark, was a piece of Broadway history for better or worse. Most people, especially if you were based in New York, saw it as like a daily headline. It was the most expensive Broadway show in history. It had lots and lots and lots of delays. It had lots of rewrites. It had lots of injuries. It had lots of troubles, even with an all-star kind of team behind it. It was tumultuous. It was wild. Again, I made some of my best core lifelong friends in that process. But that was a really messy, wild ride. But also something I would never take back, because, as I said, Broadway history. And I was really lucky because I got to create and perform all the Green Goblin stunts. So the climax of the entire Broadway show was this 3.5-minute aerial fight sequence that was over the head of the audience. We spent months and months and months creating this, but Spider-Man and I would fight, physically fight. He'd land on my back. We would fist fight. We would fly. I was flying up to the mezzanine, Spider-Man was landing in the aisles, and we were fighting over the heads of the audience. It was really, really, really cool.
That sounds awesome. I wish I saw that. Was that scary? Like, how did they make you fly? And was it like safe for you?
So if you've ever watched a football game, like, or the Super Bowl, like, there's a 4-point system for a camera that you see kind of hovering over the game. It's 4 cables to each corner, and it's like makes it so it can go all over the place really quickly. That was the same system they used to latch me in. I had like a 9-foot wingspan, crazy costume, and this huge harness that was very heavy, and it clicked in at those 4 points. But then what they did is they also custom built this way with wires that allowed me to steer and then lock into place. So it looked like I was actually flying, because I could change my direction and lock into place and then like spin, and I could kind of control some of that. And we made it, no joke, inch by inch. I'd be in that harness for hours and days. And because especially we had so many people inspecting the show because there were injuries, they would go inch by inch to make sure that we were far enough away from the audience. When the fight happened, what kind of reverb and what kind of effects happened, we'd have to trial and error create it over and over again. But it was a very, very cool piece of history to be part of.
That's so cool. I would be pretty scared to be like hovering above the crowd. Was that scary for you, or did you get used to it pretty quick in rehearsal?
I thought it was pretty cool. I got used to it pretty quick. I'm a little bit of a daredevil, though, and I really like that kind of stuff. So I did the first time you see Spider-Man, and he does this backflip and lands at the front row. Like, my hand is actually on the edge of the stage, staring the first row in the face. That was more scary at first, just learning how to do that the first time. But the Green Goblin stuff, we rehearsed it so much that it was always pretty exciting. It was my favorite part.
So that sounds like really fun. And like, I'm just like a huge fan of Marvel in general. So like the fact that you got to do that sounds like it sounds so cool. From your bio, you also used to model, or still do model.
Good thing this is a podcast, so your people can't judge. Yes, I still model, and I have been modeling for 10 years.
What are like some famous brands that you've like modeled for?
You know, I'm gonna maybe just like not give you the answer you want here. Modeling is a really weird world. Yeah. I don't encourage anyone to get into it. I fell into it. It is not the glamorous. I mean, it is. I've traveled the world. I've done cool things with it, but I mean, it's also just a really bizarre industry. So yeah. To answer your original question, anything from like Target to Macy's to Loro Piana to some of these nicer upscale brands that I'm sure you've never heard of, but it's a weird world.
Yeah. No, I've heard people say that to me too, like, because it is like very strange and like people like don't necessarily, it's not like what people like picture it to be, like this all perfect like world. Everyone's just like perfect and just like, yeah.
Well, first off, there's no such thing as a perfect person. Second, it's, think about it. Your mom and dad gave you a mixture of genes. You just get what you get. And then, you know, your mom and dad should take 10% of every modeling job if you do one, because like there's nothing in your control around that. Yeah. And then it's just so silly.
Yeah.
So, and people take it very seriously. And then they start to think of themselves as better than, because they have a pretty jawline, and you're kind of like, no, you're boring.
Yeah.
You need a passion. You need friends.
Yeah. That's a interesting take on that. I've never really heard anything about modeling. But I didn't realize at all what the world's like.
Yeah, I could go into more detail, but honestly, that's just my opinion. It does have some benefits. I've gotten to travel to some really cool places, but performing, as I said, is what I knew I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I think we've touched on a ton of points. And to wrap things up, what is like one last thing that you wish you could tell every 13-year-old in the world?
Oh, you think you know it all and you don't. I remember at 13 thinking I was so confident and knew the world and knew my parents and knew it all. Even if you are a cool 13-year-old that knows that you don't, you still know less than you think you do. So be kind, be empathetic, and like listen to your gut, but also listen to your folks and your friends, because collaboration, especially at that age, is where it's at, because you don't know everything.
Thank you guys so much for listening in to our very first podcast of Things Every 13-Year-Old Should Know. Thank you so much to my co-host Wilder. Thank you so much to Colin Baja for being our first guest.
I hope you had a great time, because we did.
Stay tuned for next week's episode, and that's a wrap.
Thank you so much. Woo! Yeah, thank you. Woo!
Thanks for listening to Things Every 13-Year-Old Should Know.
Be sure to follow us on social media
and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
One more thing. If there's anything you'd like to know about,
or if you have an idea of someone you'd like to hear us talk with,
get in touch with us at thingseverythirteenyearoldshouldknow.com.
Thanks again.